Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. We'll call this episode the post-opening day, as we're still have maybe a little bit of a hangover, not an alcoholic one, but just a hangover from how much fun we had last week. So welcome to the episode. I'm here with Girl Love. Today's special guest is Patrick Dye. You know, you might not know that name, but you might know his company. He runs Guest Carts. It's expanding into other cities, and it is, I think I say, with maybe some bias, I don't know, one of the best ways to get around this city.
I agree. Plus, I can't get over the fact it's free, because nothing is free anymore. And it's technically not free to everybody. Somebody's paying for it. We'll get into that. Who's paying for your ride when you get on one of those golf carts? I can't wait to talk to him. I'm fascinated by anybody who can start a business, especially during the pandemic, and then within a few years be expanding into other cities. So looking forward to that conversation with Patrick. Sherry, what have you been working on this week?
Oh, the cities, you know, they're up and running. This council, we're in the second year of a 2-year council term, and I didn't realize we were in a lull, but guess what? We were. you know what? I'm working on this morning. By the time this episode comes out, I'll probably have a story posted, if not, you know, the very next morning. There is an effort going on right now to put a 0.3 earnings tax on the November ballot. Now, and this would be for affordable housing. This is not the city itself doing this. This is outside groups who say the city does not have enough affordable housing. And we saw this effort 2 years ago in a different form. This is the very much more that was like, well, we could take money out of the budget. Like there was lots of different options to, you know, ask citizens, do you want to take any of these options and pay for more affordable housing, which this city does need. And now there is a signature collection going on, which this was a ballot initiative before, just like this. These groups, you know, the Coalition for the Homeless, they know how to get the signatures. So we're taking this seriously about this idea of putting a 0.3% earnings tax on top of the 1.8 that the city already has, you know, to voters to see if they want to do this.
Well, it's interesting. So it's not a council-driven initiative. This is coming from external forces. That's why they're seeking a ballot initiative. What's your take on the city's just overall financial health when it comes to all the initiatives that they have to fund? And, you know, we met with the mayor, the Enquirer Editorial Board had the mayor in. And he was raising concerns with, you know, budget forecasts that looked like it was going to be very difficult just to maintain services, worried about the lack of earnings tax because of people who used to work in the city that now work remote. But just in broader terms, how do you think this fits in?
You know, I have to tell you, so we are in budget season, and I've been through a lot of budget seasons. I covered the county before I covered the city. I know all about the court's budget before I covered the county. And so I understand these budgets. And, you know, as a new budget reporter, I was like, ooh, there's just dire predictions. And then they kind of never came true. And this is the first year in a very long time where I am a little bit like, oh, no. Like yesterday, I sat through four budget presentations. I listened to them about the city budget and what's going on in some of our departments. And it's the same things that you're hearing in the real world. They can't retain employees. There's not enough people to work. They have to raise the salaries. They have to get the right workers. But then that's, you know, a lot of red tape there at City Hall to do that. And where's the money coming from? And they also, supply chain issues, everything costs more, fuel. There really does seem to be some, you know, really severe pinch points in the city budget. The fire department budget yesterday was the biggest takeaway for me. About, you know, on its face, we're short about 50 firefighters, maybe a little less. We have recruit classes to fill those usually, and that seems okay. But when you are really talking about the fire department as a whole, at this moment, there's 834 firefighters. Roughly 200 of those are eligible to retire right this second, should they decide to do that. And that was, city council took this very serious. This is, you know, last year they were all brand new when this budget process started. And I think we had an interim city manager, the mayor was new, and the budget kind of just sailed through with like, this is what we're going to do. But this is more a decision-making time for this council, this mayor. You know, it is an election year for this council. I'm not anticipating like a huge difference going forward of like, oh, well, there's so many council candidates that'll be all new council. Like, they're going to start making some decisions they're going to be accountable for. The fire fleet is completely out of life cycle. They were talking about a West Side firehouse. I mean, they need to fix the facilities for female firefighters. That is something we wrote about a lot last week when we talked about the fire chief. They need to fix those. We need probably new West Side firehouses in better places positioned for where the population is going. The West Side firehouse has like twice as many calls as other firehouses. And so it's a lot of pressure on the firefighters working there. All of this takes
money. So what you're saying is if they were going to raise an earnings tax, there's probably about four or five other competing interests that they, as a council, would be looking to fund in addition to affordable housing.
100%. And we have heard the mayor say, you know, there is a housing shortage. Affordable housing is a big issue. And nobody's like, I'm not trying to, you know, discount that. I'm hearing about all these higher rents, even from people I know. I just heard a story this morning, like my friend's cousin, you know, his rent was $500. Now it's $800. That's huge increase. And so there's no doubt that it is an issue, but is this the solution? So you guys can look for us to write like this first out of the gate story, but to explore this more in context with the budget and what really the needs are and where the money is going to come from. The budget already is $479 million, the operating budget. And that's a lot. I mean, I was thinking about it. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but when I started covering the city, like maybe 9 years ago, the budget was like $350 million some. Now, a lot of that is raises, but even then, our city workforce, if you look at some of the numbers, the comparables, it's paid less than other governments. So anyway, there's a lot of like fiscal decisions coming up here for our government leaders, and how it all fits together will be a priority for us.
All right. Well, that was a very succinct and clearly explained breakdown of where we are financially. Sherry, you must have some experience in this area.
Who knew I would understand budgets like that? And certainly Alex Coolidge would be like, how come you don't treat our own budget like that?
Well, that's another story. We could talk about personal finances sometime. So, all right. Well, are we ready to jump in a golf cart?
Absolutely. And then we're going to go have a lot of fun this summer riding in them. Welcome to special guest time on That's So Cincinnati. I'm here with Patrick Dye today as we get ready to talk about guest carts, which, you know, I feel like I do use more in the spring and the summer. Welcome, Patrick.
How are you doing? Thank you for having me on today.
So I got a news release earlier this week that talked about your company. I've already been familiar with guest carts and how easy they are to use to get around the city of Cincinnati. Kind of like feel like they're like miracle transportation. We're going to get into like how they work and what they look like and everything in a second. But you're, you know, Cincinnati company, and you're really expanding to all these other cities. And I was like, this is the perfect time to introduce like a wider audience. Tina, the man behind the golf carts you see downtown. Is that you?
No, my wife is the brainchild. I'm just a guy.
Your wife, Lauren, right? We do what we want to give credit where credit's due.
Yeah.
So why don't we start out? Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you kind of got started? You're from Cincinnati, right?
No, I'm from Charlotte originally, but I have been in Cincinnati since 2008. I came here with the company I used to work for right out of college, left there, after about a year and a half, and bought my first bar down on Vine or down on Walnut Street, right in front of the Aronoff, called Scene. So started that in 2010, and then ended up, my wife and I both wanted to, we looked at buying more bars, and then stumbled upon this project when I was in on a bachelor party in Nashville, something kind of like this. And I was like, how could we do this and do it better? So started, that was like summer of 2017, late summer. And then we went to, I worked with the city and got started with that. And they were talking to people in Nashville, and it just turned into run with it. So we officially launched opening day of 2018. Then took 18, 19 to really learn the business. As we all know, too many people try to run out of the gate, and we wanted to crawl before we could walk. And then we'll get to a jog, and then we'll get to a run. And so
take us back to the bachelor party. So you're at this bachelor party. You don't have to give us the dirty details, but
I was going to ask you, Sherry, like, where are you going with this? Some things.
Do you just see one kind of, was it planned transportation, or it's like it's driving by and you're like, stick your thumb out?
No. So it was planned. So one of my groomsmen, was also in this wedding, has one leg. And so he got this as more of like, all right, we don't have to worry about walking anywhere. Let's just go with it. Like, he doesn't care. I mean, he's got a prosthetic, but so he was like, we had four golf carts that were taking us around all of Nashville. So it was just like, all right, we don't care. We're all being young and stupid. And so, all right, let's just do this. And so it really worked out really well for us. And, just got the wheels turning in my mind, and my family is involved in the golf cart business, like regular golf cart business, and with club car. So I said, okay, what do we have in this per se line of business, and what can be done street legal, like what, you know, completely street legal, and figured that all out. And then that was the whole end of 2017, last couple months of 17, getting everything worked with the city and getting all of the right proper channels to making sure everything was street legal. And then since the city said nothing like it, they were like, all right, we're in.
And I do feel like Nashville's ground zero for what could be street legal. I mean, the last time I was in Nashville, we were in an Uber, and we were driving behind a pickup truck with a hot tub in the back. And like my like city, I've covered police sensibility was like, that's the most dangerous thing I've ever seen. Nashville.
What makes a golf cart street legal?
Well, so there's the thing. So there is a difference. There is a golf cart and a low speed vehicle. So there's two separate things. And nobody knows this. And like when people call it a golf cart, I don't really, it's pointless for me to try to tell them, no, it's actually called this, but because nobody's going to in their mind think of low speed vehicle. So there's a golf cart and a low speed vehicle. Your standard golf cart, which, you know, drive around your neighborhood, is not quote unquote street legal. Now they're not going to, now when you're driving in your neighborhood, it's confined. Nobody's going to really say anything. Now, you try to get out on the main street, they're going to pull you over, unless this is like a golf cart community. So, like if you go up to Put-in Bay because they really want you to use golf carts versus cars, they don't really care. So it's called a golf cart community. But municipalities can set precedent. Say, you know, golf carts can drive on the street. It's golf. It's, you know, everybody wants to use golf carts versus cars. It's fine. But the difference between a golf cart and a low speed vehicle is a low speed vehicle is treated like a car. So they are street legal. So you have to have headlights, tail lights, seatbelts, DOT windshields, the list of the gambit that goes on and on that they that are required. And then
an actual actual license plate too.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So we have, and they have a VIN number versus a golf cart has a serial number.
Gotcha. So it truly is, like you say, a low speed battery operated vehicle as opposed to the air quote golf cart.
Yep.
So my experience, the first time I rode one, I was walking to TLQ Stadium for the Who concert.
Yep.
And because I'm cheap, we parked at the Enquire building where I have pay for monthly parking anyway.
Yeah.
And my wife and I prepared to walk. It's about probably a mile, maybe three quarters of a mile. And one of your vehicles pulled up. There was already a couple in there. And this guy was like, "You want to ride?" And I was like, because I'm cheap again. Remember, I didn't pay for parking close to the stadium. And I was like, no, okay. And he could kind of tell that I was cheap. And he was like, "But it's free." And I was like, "Oh, well then, that's, I can afford free. So let's jump on." And it was a fun experience. We became friends with the other couple in the car because they were obviously going to the Who concert. And you know, it was just this great experience. And the first thing I thought about was, okay, how's this guy making any money driving people around for free? Can you talk a little bit about how does this work as a business? And were you worried in the beginning that it was going to pencil out?
So the way we started again, this goes back to the crawl before you can walk stage. And so the exterior of the cars are all wrapped in advertising. And so we have clients with P&G, ProLink is a very big client of ours since day one, Fifth Third, we use Anheuser-Busch, the Reds. I mean, we have multiple different clients throughout Duke Energy, all over, local and national. And they're the ones that cover the advertising cost. And what their advertising cost that we charge them is what generates why it's free for the consumer. And so they love it for the simple fact this is, out of home advertising for them. If you look at a billboard, which you get 3 to 6 seconds, nobody really pays attention to billboards and they're extremely expensive. Or this, you're getting not only the rider on the inside, but you get people seeing it at all times all over. And it's not, stagnant as a billboard is. So they look at it as, I can get all of downtown, all of OTR into Northern Kentucky, and I'm paying a completely different price. I'd have to have 4 or 5 times the number of billboards just to do what this does. And you can't give billboards that show up right in front of TQL or right in front of Paul Brown, or you can't get them. They won't show up right in front of PNC, Pavilion or PNC Ballpark. So that's what everybody likes about it, because it just gives them way more ad exposure than just a standard billboard or social.
I think in the business they call that captive advertising, because you're not going anywhere. You're, like you said, you're spending some time with the message right there. All right. Yep. So I'm fascinated when businesses start up. So when you saw in Nashville what was happening, it sounds like it was a little different than what you were doing. Was there any proprietary
No, they were using a golf cart and they were charging us for it. And so there's a couple other companies throughout the country, predominantly based in South Florida, just because of the year-round weather. And we just said, okay, let's just see what we have here. And we always had people in the first 2 years wanting to reach out to us, asking us to expand and look at other areas. And we just weren't ready. We would have failed. And so 2020, we finally decided we were ready to expand, and said, let's just do it. And so we had our first two, at the time, licensees. We started the conversation. Well, then COVID happened. And this is like January and February of 2020. Like I'm working with our current teams in Chicago and Detroit. And then we all were like, well, we don't know what's going to happen. So let's pause it. But the teams were like, no, let's just listen. The world is going to come back at some point. So let's just get all the paperwork done. And when we can operate, we can operate. So which was perfect. And for us, like I ended up closing my bar during COVID and was out and done. And then, but for guests, it was perfect timing. We were able to spend all this time working on all of our legal work, getting all of the, you know, the franchise disclosure stuff, the license agreements, getting everything done. So when they could finally open, we were ready to go. So I look at it as a blessing in disguise, and you know, COVID was the best thing that ever happened to us. And because, you know, we were able to be operational back, what, 6-7 weeks after it started, on a very limited skeleton basis, but our team still made money. We went through all the COVID precautions. They were wearing masks. They were wiping down after everybody got in and out of every ride. So we went through heavy COVID protocols at all times. And especially because the windows are, it's open air in the, you know, the summer, spring and summer, we roll the windows down so everybody can, so people feel more comfortable. And again, just took off for us. So we just really hadn't looked back since COVID.
So how many guest cards do you have in Cincinnati?
We have 5 here in Cincy. And I'll never have more than that. Unless there is some big, you know, company that we're working on a big contract with. There is a supply and demand side to it. Because, again, we have to make sure we have enough. The advertisers are paying for the advertising on the vehicle. Otherwise, it's, you know, just sitting there with no advertising. You know, it is what it is. But I would rather, could I put 10 vehicles out on the road, 15? Yes, I could do that all day long. But if I don't have enough advertisers on it, then I'm losing money.
So tell me how the expansion started. You started in Cincinnati. Was it a scale issue? Like, or was it more of a, these are opportunities?
So it was kind of going back to where, like, we needed to learn the business. And then it just organically happened. Our first two teams reached out to us. We started going through everything. It was great. And then we had our Chicago team and our Denver team, or Chicago, Denver, and Detroit were our first ones. And then we had Charlotte. And then we've added Louisville. We've added Scottsdale. We've added, you know, the Strip, the downtown and the Strip in Las Vegas. And that opens up, I could technically this month, but we're going to push it a little bit till next month. We got all of our permits. God, that's been a disaster. Clark County's a bunch of gangsters. Everybody needs their cut, and you got to go through everything. but no, it's the biggest thing that slowed our growth down was supply chain. It's just like any other, you know, COVID delayed our suppliers on getting parts. Stuff that was, we were 30 days on getting vehicles prior to COVID, and sometimes it could be as little as like 10 days. Now we're like up to 6 months.
Wow.
So, but the biggest thing is the lithium ion batteries, because we don't use your standard, you know, car AGM batteries. We use lithium ion for all the vehicles.
So tell me about, so I just stumbled across it. I was walking and this guy was like, you want to ride?
Yeah.
Can you talk about how, you know, can I hail a guest? How does that work if I want to actually plan?
Every market's
not,
a little
not
bit
be
different.
Random about it.
Right. Every market's a little bit different, just based on what the laws are for the cities and stuff like that. But in Cincy, you can hail it just like a cab. You can download the app, which is the biggest thing for us right now, is we're really pushing our app. But then you can also call the phone line. And we always have somebody that's on call with the phone at one of, on the hours of operation, it rings to the drivers. And then they, and because again, my thing was, I want you to be able to, in real time, figure out how long it's going to take. So it gives you, you know, the ability, you know, you're talking directly to one of the drivers and they can tell you, hey, traffic is crazy packed. It's going to be a while, or I have, we're backed up 3 or 4 rides. You know, you might want to take an Uber. Okay. Because again, if we can offer you and tell you from a, the aspect, because we're free, hey, it might be easier to get, you can get there faster. We're going to, we'll tell you that. We're just going to say, hey, it's going to be 30 minutes. It could be an hour based on, you know, how backed up we are with the number of, you know, people on the road. So, and again, and that goes back to kind of my, I could put 10, 15 vehicles on the road and have no problem sustaining it. But it's just this, you know, the supply and demand side of things with, you know, corporate clients and stuff like that. But we found like that 5 is a sweet spot for Cincinnati. It's not big enough to compete. You know, if Chicago will have 10 or 12 in the next couple months, once the supply with our supply chain, Detroit will have 5, Denver will have 6, Charlotte will have 4. Vegas, we're going to have on the strip, I'll have 15 or 20. And then like downtown, we'll have like 5 to 10.
So one of the things that I love about Cincinnati is that we're so Cincinnati, hence the name of the podcast. But what made you stay here? So you come for a job and now you're going to kind of switch things. Did you consider going back to Charlotte and launching a company there? What made you stay here?
Well, I mean, we have an office in Charlotte. So we have people down there. We have a franchisee down there. So, you know, it's nice. You know, the fact is, Cincinnati, it's a great, great city. My wife and I, neither one of us are from here. She's from Pittsburgh, and then she went to Ohio State and moved here for her job after college, and then ended up, you know, she just stayed, and we've been here, and we've got great friends here. It's economical. I opened my bar here. So it's like, I had no desire really to move back. And you know, it just grows on you. When you move here, you're like, okay, all right, Cincinnati, not whatever, but then it sticks with you. And then it really has showcased why, like, people that are born here, like, don't leave. They just don't leave. You know,
agree. I've said it before. This is a great place to live. Alex and I, at one point in our lives, we're like, we'll go work at the New York Times. Alex wanted to live in New York City. He went to Columbia. And then at a certain point, we're like, wait, are we ever leaving? And we're like, no, we're not. So we love it here.
I mean, again, like, I live in Mount Lookout, and we lived in the city forever. And then finally, once we settled down with deciding we wanted to have kids, you know, I didn't want to live in the city. And we lived right above my bar. So it was kind of like, yeah, I can't have a kid living right above my bar.
What is your bar now? Like, what's the name of it so people can kind of picture it?
Well, now it's Azul. We closed up and I never reopened after COVID.
Okay. So what is it?
Now it's Azul. My bar was called Scene. Yeah. Yep. It's where Azul used to be. Yeah.
Okay.
So you're out of the bar business.
Yep. And
I was going to ask you how you do both. So you mentioned that in Chicago, you have a franchisee.
Mm-hmm.
What I was going to ask is, are most of your other locations franchises that you've sold, or is it a mix of, say, corporate and franchisees?
No, we only have one other corporate store. But everything else is all franchised. They are, our Chicago team was actually, she worked with, originally at the time was a lawyer for P&G. And so she worked for P&G and was from Chicago, born and raised in Chicago, came down here, went to Northwestern. I mean, she's awesome. And then she ended up, COVID happened. And so she was able to then just move back to Chicago, and they were already going to do Chicago anyways, but it kind of made it. She has her brother and one of her business partners all living there. So it was like, all right, worked out perfect. They were going to help operations. And then now the whole team's there and she's just done, they've done a phenomenal job with it. They're great. But again, it's all been everything's franchised, but the Las Vegas Strip, which my wife and I and another partner own, he actually lives here. He's a P&G guy as well.
That's his classic P&G employees with their second careers. They know what they're doing. Yep. I will say something that did catch my attention in the press release is that all your franchisees are women and minorities.
Yep.
And that I think that is a very telling thing about your company to do that.
Yeah, it's all been organic. We've done everything ourselves from a growth standpoint. We're getting to the point now we are going to look at this year just because we have for how we want to grow, we're probably going to look at bringing in some kind of like a franchise broker. We're going to entertain the idea, learn more, a little bit more about it if we decide we want to go down that path. Because I would like to get to 30 markets before the end of next year.
How many are you in now?
We're in 11. And then I have four others that we haven't announced a start date with them just due to the fact of the supply chain problem. So once we have a better grasp, I was actually in Miami at my supplier's office last week, and then I'll be in Anaheim in 2 weeks at the actual the company's corporate headquarters, going through some, like just learning a little bit more on the supply side of things. But I mean, me getting to 20 this year is not really that difficult, and get to the 30 mark is my goal next year.
So what was one of the biggest things you learned in terms of, from mistakes or errors in the formation of this business, like the growing pain period? I'm always curious to know, like, was there a moment where you're like, I don't know if this is going to work or not, and then something started to happen, or was it just smooth sailing from?
Oh, no, never. That's it. If anybody tells you that, they're lying.
You are making it sound very easy. Like, I had this idea in Nashville and here we are.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. So we bought, my family's company, we had a completely different vehicle when we first started. Totally different. And, most golf carts, your standard golf cart, doesn't have doors or anything like that. And so I ended up having to use like marine grade fabric. I had to custom build out of a company out of Michigan. We custom built doors, like flaps style doors, to like open up to make it super easy to get in and out of, that we use magnets with. So it was tough. Like, I'm not even going to lie. And we ended up, then after we beat those to, they just did not, they couldn't handle the wind and the elements, and they'd flap up and water everywhere, snow. And I'm like, all right, we're done with this. So I ended up then building doors, fabricating metal doors, building them onto the sides, and then to the tune of an extra like $5,000 or $6,000 a piece per vehicle. And then I ended up saying, during COVID, we did have a competitor here that tried Ogo, and then they tried to grow too big too fast. Their downfall was, what I felt really bad for, was Blink, the first year of Blink. They ended up doubling their fleet out of the blue. And because to handle Blink. Blink wanted them to double the fleet. And again, supply and demand, there's not enough companies that can afford certain things. So when COVID happened, they ended up closing up shop, and I ended up buying all of their vehicles from them.
I wondered what happened to them, but then I wasn't like, it's still the podcast. It's not like the hard-hitting investigative interview here.
Yeah, no. Those guys are great. They have other businesses outside of this. This wasn't their main focus. And so they all just did their own thing, and we ended up buying all of their vehicles from them, and I ended up selling my vehicles. So yeah, I I, over time, this goes back to one of those, this was, you know, I spent all this money on these original vehicles, beat them down, depreciated them, and then sold them, lost money on them, sold them, whatever, and then bought these other vehicles. So now we've gone to strictly to this vehicle, and that's the only vehicle we'll ever use because it's got like already doors on it, and it's got heat and HVAC and everything and the gambit, and it's perfect. And advertisers love it so much more just due to the fact that it's a larger footprint for people to advertise on.
Well, what's your college major? I'm just curious.
Criminal justice and psychology.
Do you use any of that now?
Oh, yeah, but nothing, like, it's not, like, I don't have a business degree. My original plan was to go into the FBI. So I spent my last year looking into that, and then when we started looking at what I was going to make per year, I was like, I'm making double that when I was working in the bar and restaurant industry. I'm like, I'm good. Thank you. Have a good day. Failed on that one. Yep. I graduated in December, bought my condo, was my graduation present from my grandma gave me the down payment for my condo. And then I never thought I was going to leave Charlotte. And then 2 months later, I moved here and haven't moved back since.
So I'm curious, and we're running up on time, but for a, let's say your Cincinnati operation, what's the employee profile look like? I mean, obviously you have an advertising sales team. I'm imagining you have to have somebody that manages the fleet, keeping it up and running.
Yep.
You know, someone to coordinate and train drivers and all of that. How many employees in the Cincinnati operation?
Drivers or regular employees?
Just total employees that you have. Like, I'm trying to get an idea of, like, yeah, what the operation size is in Cincinnati.
So there's myself, my sister-in-law, she's based out of Orlando, and then our operations lead. And they handle like schedules, they handle driver training, they handle the maintenance on everything. And then I have 12 drivers.
And right here, we're going to give a shout out to Joe, who's amazing. Yeah. The podcast listeners know my poor pinched sciatic nerve. I could not walk during Blink. I've already talked about the guest cards. Joe drove my family around. It's one of my most special memories of Cincinnati. To have him and his knowledge yeah. of this city, you know, it was really incredible. Like, I took some back roads. I was like, what? And so we have to definitely give him a shout out. And he drove me once before, like, that I remembered once I like really met him and got to talk to him, is when we were driving around, in which he took me around. I just happened to see him wave him down for the Pride Parade. And yeah. like that you can't, the whole city, every street was shut down that year. Every street. I'm like, oh, he's like, I got you. He took us in the guest car. These are low speed vehicles. On that on-ramp, like you think you're getting on 75, but you're really going to go up to Ezra Charles. Yep. And I was like, oh no. And he's like, I got you. And he did.
Yep. Well, it's interesting. So like we look at you know, because our age demographic for riders is 21 to 65. But if you have like a family and you go into a Reds game, you know, well, you know, parents can hold their kid and they can do that. Because it's just fun for them to do. It's, you know, again, it goes back into, you've got music, you've got lights, it's just something fun to do.
There's like little disco balls. I don't know if they all have them.
Yeah, they do.
So fun.
And we should probably tell our listeners, if they're trying to look this up, it's not guest, the standard spelling, like I'm your guest. Correct. It's GEST, and that actually stands for something.
Yep, it stands for Green, Easy, Safe Transportation.
Now, did you make up that acronym, or?
Well, it was one of those things, like when we were going through like planning stages, trying to come up with a name, what we were going to do, and it just happened that like our office is on Guest Street and it just clicked and worked and there it goes.
That's what I thought. I thought it was for that.
Yep. And then we just came up with the acronym.
The story behind the story.
Yep.
Never let a good word go to waste when you can like turn it into an acronym. That's fantastic.
Well, because we kept like, you know, you're thinking like, be our guest, do this. What can we, I mean, we were trying to think of all sorts of different things. And then it just like, wait a minute, everybody changes things. We wanted it shorter. We wanted something that is a one syllable word because everybody, you don't want something that's like multi-level. And so it's just one syllable, it quick and easy rolls off your mouth. Nobody knows what Uber has no meaning. The word Uber is like, it's not that. It has nothing to do with this. Oh, it worked out. Okay, great. So one syllable, short and easy. Lyft, same way.
Got it. Got it. Well, what a fascinating story. And now our listeners will know the story behind the story when some random guy in a golf cart offers something too good
it's
to be
okay.
true, a free ride.
Yeah. It's okay. So you do have to tip the drivers. This is very important. Like, yes, yeah. These carts have advertising on them, but that's a very key part of the experience. And, you know, you have to carry cash, which I do because I know I use the guest carts all the time and I always make sure I have cash for them. You don't need cash for anything else now. The stadium's like, oh, we're cashless. Sometimes you need cash.
You can tip them if you get through the app. Like if you order through the app, you can tip them through the app. If you are using, you can Venmo them, Cash App them, whatever. However they have it, they actually have kind of like hanging from the back. Like you can scan the QR codes because everybody's got a QR code. Like you can scan their Venmo and Venmo them. I mean, there's no set amount that you have to tip them. So a dollar, whatever. It's your personal preference. So we don't require a set thing. Like it's like, no, there's no, it's whatever you personally prefer.
Okay. So what are your hours? And why don't you say your phone number?
Okay. So our phone number is 513-421-4378. And then our hours of operation, during red season, we normally close on Monday, but if there's a Reds home game, we're active. And most of the time it's from like 6 to 10. So our normal hours of operation, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, 6 to 10 PM. And then on Friday is 6 to 1:30. And Saturday, in the middle of the summertime, we'll open up our hours a little bit more. Like during daytime and stuff like that, once it gets a little bit warmer with all the events going on. But it's normally 6 to 1:30. And then on Sunday, during baseball season, it's normally like 12 to 6. And all of our hours are listed on our website. And then everything on social media, it's updated every week with our hours of operation.
Oh, if only everybody did that.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us. I learned a lot today. Did not know that guest stood for something. So I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. I'm glad you stayed in Cincinnati.
Oh, yes. We love it here. You know, maybe in a few years we might move to Florida. I don't know. I'm getting tired of the cold. The cold and gloom.
That's a common path down like the today. Highway from Cincinnati somewhere in Florida. Yeah. That's
yep.
When we look at our readership profile of out of market readers, it's Florida by far.
Oh yeah.
So
that's so Ohio.
You'll find a lot of, if you go down there, you can even find Skyline Chili in some Florida cities because of all the Ohio transplants.
I can't do it.
You haven't been here long enough. That's why it takes a minute. It's okay. You'll get it. I mean, Joey Votto doesn't eat it.
Yes. My son loved it. So I'm a 19 month old. So we go and smashes everything. So it works out great.
All right. Well, Patrick, thank you so much.
All right. Thank you guys for your time today.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. So pinch sciatic nerve or not, I walked about 16,000 steps on opening day. Burl, you?
I you know what? I probably walked at least that much. You know, because as we know now, I always park at the Enquirer and walk wherever I need to go downtown, because if I'm already paying for parking, I'm so cheap, why would I pay on top of it? But did you have a good opening day?
I had a great opening day.
To the game, but I saw, you know, you were out and about, saw you at the Holy Grail.
Yes. I don't think I've said yet. I'm participating in the FBI's Citizen Academy, which anyone can apply for. I mean, the group of people in the Citizens Academy, and I'll talk about this maybe on like a further, like another podcast when we have more time and everything. But it's just a diverse group of citizens. I can't wait to get to know them. People who just have an interest in law enforcement or the FBI, and we're just learning what they do. And so no one is to take this any other way than the fact that maybe I wrote some stuff about the FBI, you know, in past years, and now there's just a curiosity. It's nothing beyond that. But anyway, I had that.
Not a career change in your future.
No, or there's no stories coming out of this. This is not like about stories hint. It's like, no.
That's cool. We will have more about that. But
we saw each other at the banks.
Yes, but it doesn't really matter, because when it's opening day, it's of course the start of baseball season. But as we've talked about, you can have the perfect opening day experience, not even go to the game. We were talking to Jim Mooring, the owner of the Holy Grail, and he was looking at how many people were standing in the Dora area, in the banks, you know, outside of his place, all the way down, you know, probably past the Freedom Center. It was shoulder to shoulder people. There was, you know, bands playing and everybody out. And he said, there is no way all these people have tickets. They're going to be out here watching the game on the big screens, you know, enjoying their beverages, being able to walk outside on a beautiful blue sky day. You know, and we can look back now and forgive the Reds for losing opening day, because as reported by Bobby Nightingale, the Reds already have more wins in April this year than they did last year in April. And it's only, as we record this, April 4th.
I'm all about positive thinking, Burl.
So for now, we can say the first place Reds are off to a good start.
You know what? And same for FC Cincinnati.
Oh my gosh. It's a great time to be a sports fan.
Predictions for FC Cincinnati are a little rosier. Like, they put a lot of work into this team. They're in a different place than the Reds. The predictions really are that we're going to have a really good season there. But we will take what we can get with the Reds right now.
There you go. Well, I'm glad you had a good opening day. Should we call this a wrap?
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks, everybody.